Well, good morning. Special to be here with you. You can start turning to Psalm 121. That is what we're studying this morning. And I also have it printed on the back of the bulletin. I did look into permissions and copyright and all that stuff, and I think it was okay to put on a bulletin. But I'm not a legal expert. But we have it there because I want us to read the psalm together in a few minutes later on. So this is a psalm that is special to me and to a lot of us. And I was thinking about what makes it special. I think part of it is the journey language and the pilgrimage kind of sounding language that is in it. And we think about our journey through life, and we think about all those steps, and we think about the challenges and difficulties and trusting God. And something I've been thinking about is, how do I live life as though God really is my source of help? And not just, kind of in a theoretical sort of way believe it, but to actually make it a part of my daily experience and reality. And I don't know that I know the answer to all of that, but I think it's good for us to think about that question. How do we really go through life seeing God as our source of help? Okay, so Psalm 121 is a psalm of ascents. That's what it says underneath that psalm. It's a psalm of ascents. There are 15 of these from Psalm 120 to Psalm 134. And I want to talk about this collection for a minute. We don't know who wrote most of these. Four of them are attributed to David. One of them is attributed to Solomon. We don't know for sure when most of them were written, except that a good number of them look like they were written after the exile into Babylon. And there are several different theories about what ascents really means, and nobody really knows for sure. It could be referring to pilgrims climbing through the hill country of Judea on the way to Jerusalem. That would seem like a very fitting meaning, but there are other theories as well. A lot of scholars feel like these 15 psalms were associated with pilgrimage in one way or another. Not that the authors necessarily wrote them thinking of, I'm going to write a psalm for pilgrims, but that they became a collection that were associated with the idea of pilgrims traveling to Jerusalem, celebrating festivals in Jerusalem, and maybe even those returning from captivity like Babylon to Jerusalem or to Israel. So we don't know for sure that they were used on the journeys themselves. They might have been. Or maybe they were used more as sort of an arrival pilgrim procession or ceremony once they are in Jerusalem at the temple. Now, something scholars have noticed that I think is really interesting is how these psalms seem to have a bit of a progression to them in the order in which they occur. So if you look at Psalm 120, now let me flip real quick here. I don't have it actually open in my Bible. Okay, so Psalm 120... Now, this fascinates me, but maybe you won't find it that interesting. Psalm 120 says, in my distress, I cried to the Lord. He heard me. And so this is a miserable person. You get down to verse 5. Woe is me that I dwell in Meshech, that I dwell among the tents of Kedar. Meshech is referring to what is now modern-day Turkey, or maybe even north of there, Armenia or Georgia. So a region quite far away from Israel. So this is a person here in Psalm 120 who is far away from his homeland. And he's feeling this longing, and he's in distress. Okay? So that's Psalm 120. Then you get into Psalm 121, the one we'll be studying today. And you have words like, he will not allow your foot to be moved. He who keeps you will not slumber. The Lord is your shade at your right hand. The sun shall not strike you by day, nor the moon by night. That sounds like a journey, doesn't it? Sounds like someone traveling. Then you get to Psalm 122. I was glad when they said to me, let us go into the house of the Lord. Our feet have been standing within your gates, O Jerusalem. That sounds like arrival. So there's a bit of a progression just in these first three psalms, from far away from homeland, journey, arrival. And then the later on psalms in this sequence tend to focus more on worship and the temple experience and so on. So it's just an interesting thing to think about these. And you can see why people would view these psalms as being kind of a pilgrimage collection of psalms. There's a few things here in Psalm 121 that I want you to enjoy before we read them. There's a lot of parallelism, which we would expect. Each stanza, the second verse, expands on the previous one. So, I will lift up my eyes to the hills from where comes my help. And then verse 2 says, my help comes from the Lord who made heaven and earth. And then verse 3, he who keeps you will not slumber. And then expanded on in verse 4, he who keeps Israel will not slumber or sleep. And verse 5, the Lord is your shade at your right hand. And then verse 6 expands on that. Sun shall not strike you at day, nor the moon at night. So there's this kind of neat progression from in each stanza. The second verse expands or completes the previous one. There's also something going on in this psalm that is called a merism. This is a brand new word to me. I just learned it this week. So a merism is a figure of speech that expresses totality by giving two kind of opposite ends of a spectrum. And believe it or not, you have probably been using merisms without knowing it. For example, when you lost something, you were looking for it, you probably said, I have looked high and low for my wallet and I can't find it. And that's a merism. You looked high, you looked low, but you obviously also looked all the places in between, at eye level and so on. That's a merism. And there are a few of these in this psalm. For example, my help comes from the Lord who made heaven way up there and earth down here and everything in between. He will protect you from the sun by day and the moon by night and everything in between. He will protect you in your going out and coming in. And obviously not just when you're going through the door, but everything in between those two ends of the spectrum. And then even the very last phrase, maybe this isn't technically a merism, but it's close. From this time forth and forevermore. So not just now, not really far into the future, but also all the time in between. Another thing to appreciate about this psalm is the repeated use of the word keep or preserve. Depending on your translation, maybe it'll say protect. So there are six of these words, and they all have the same root word, which is the Hebrew word shamar, which is also a new word I just learned. And it means to keep or to watch over or preserve. It is interesting to see how this word is used in the Old Testament. And I think if you just looked at occurrences of this word in the Old Testament, you would probably kind of get the salvation story. God put man in the Garden of Eden to cultivate it and keep it, shamar. And you see how that turned out. It's a little ironic that the most beautiful places in the world are the ones that are most untouched by humans. Cain asked God, "Am I my brother's keeper, Shamar?" Well, he wasn't. He was his brother's murderer. Far from being what it should have been, and still couldn't have been his brother's keeper, really. And then the really especially, I like this one a lot, is in Jacob's dream. Do you remember, you know, when the time when he had the stone for his pillow, and he had this dream of the ladder and angels going up and down, and God is at the top. And in that dream, in that vision, God gave him a promise, and it contains this word, Shamar. And it's especially fitting here this morning as we're talking about pilgrimage. This is in Genesis 28, verse 15. God told Jacob, "Behold, I am with you and will keep you, Shamar, I will keep you, wherever you go, and will bring you back to this land. For I will not leave you until I have done what I have spoken to you." Sometimes I can feel a little reluctant, and probably should be, to take an Old Testament verse like that and just kind of say that, seize it as being our promise today or my promise today. But I feel like this one is. You know, this is kind of what God says to Christians, his people. He has this intention of walking with us and keeping us wherever we go and bringing us to a place that he intends us to be. So that's the word Shamar. It's in here six different times in Psalm 121. Now, I would like us to stand and read this psalm together. So if you can stand and grab your bulletin, if you don't have a New King James Version Bible handy, the back of your bulletin has this psalm on it. And we're going to say it together. And we're going to try to make, we're going to do this as a responsive reading, I think is what we'll do. So I will read like verse 1, you will respond with verse 2, and so on. I'll read the odd-numbered verses, and you read the even-numbered. Does that work? Okay, Psalm 121. "I will lift up my eyes to the hills, from whence comes my help. He will not allow your foot to be moved. He who keeps you will not slumber.
Behold, he who keeps Israel shall neither slumber nor sleep."
The Lord is your keeper. The Lord is your shade at your right hand.
The sun shall not strike you by day, nor the moon by night.
The Lord shall preserve you from all evil. He shall preserve your soul.
The Lord shall preserve your going out and your coming in from this time forth and even forevermore.
Thank you. You may be seated. So, I'm going to indulge my imagination here in a bit. I like to think about things we have in common with godly people who lived very long ago and how they worked through decisions and thought about where God fit into these things and had to make decisions like, are we going to go to Jerusalem for this festival and deal with the cost, expense, and risk to do that. So I'm going to relate an imaginary scene that happened in a little house 2,500 years ago, we'll say, in Capernaum. We have a little Jewish family. The father is Andrew. Okay, that's the dad, Andrew. And I didn't pick his name because we have an Andrew here. And the mother is Sarah. Okay, Andrew and Sarah. And they are having an intense discussion with their two children. And the reason they're having this intense discussion is because Andrew has just told them that over the next few days, they need to start getting ready for the trip to Jerusalem for the Passover. It's spring. And Joseph, who is age 16, and Rachel, who is 10, they knew, they were anticipating this. This discussion was about ready to happen because it happens every year. And they have prepared themselves because they don't want to go. And Rachel says, gives her reasons. She says, Benjamin's family isn't going. And we went last year. We don't really have to go every year. And my cat's about ready to have kittens. And who's going to water my avocado plant? And her brother, Joseph, also has a carefully prepared case. And he said, Dad, wouldn't we be better off if we just stayed home this year? I mean, look, the barley crop is about ready to come in, and it needs attention, and we need to be taking care of it. And this trip is expensive. We need the money. We need to save some money, and that barley crop is really important. And, you know, if we save money this year, we could maybe buy a donkey. And then we could go next year. It'd be a lot easier to go with a donkey hauling our goods along. And it would just make sense. King Solomon talks about this kind of thing, you know, preparing for the future. And Andrew, the dad, says, you know, I see what you're saying. You're making good points. You know, the difficult thing with children is when they start making good points. As they get older, that starts to happen. You have to be prepared for that. So Andrew looks around, and he said, but here's the thing. And he looks around the room, and he walks over and finds a reed that's leaning up on the wall. And this came out of one of their bamboo. Okay, they probably didn't have bamboo. It came out of one of their mats that they were sleeping on. And Andrew, can you hear me? Andrew says, I want you to pretend that I'm Grandfather Simon for a minute, okay? Just pretend I'm Grandfather Simon. And I'm using this reed, and, oh, I hope this thing doesn't break, because I can barely walk, and I need it to hold me up. And, oh, my, if it snaps, I'm in big trouble. I need to take good care of this thing. And he's trying to walk around with this reed. I put masking tape on the bottom just to make sure it didn't actually scratch anything. And as he's doing this, Rachel laughs at her dad and says, why are you doing that? Grandfather Simon would not, why would he use that? Why would he use that as a, why wouldn't he use his oak staff instead? That reed wasn't made for that kind of weight. And Andrew says, exactly. This is the point I was trying to make. The reed is not meant to support his kind of weight. And in the same way, barley and money and oil and all these other things, they're good to have and they're useful, but they aren't meant to be leaned on. You know, that's not what they're... what they're there for. And in fact, all of the good things we have come from God. And so that's why we think, me and your mom think it's so important to go to the temple this year. Andrew said, it's like that song we heard last year at the temple. I will lift up my hands to the mountains. And Rachel says, no. It was eyes, because she remembers her dad. Doesn't remember these things so well. This is why I don't try to quote the song by memory. And the children in this scene are so impressed this is where the part where you know it's fictitious. They're so impressed by the dad's object lesson that they have a change of heart. And the family starts packing up. Andrew talks to the neighbors about keeping an eye on the barley crop. Sarah makes sure the water skins are clean and ready for the traveling. Children get over their negative attitude. Joseph weeds the garden one last time and fixes a broken sandal strap for Rachel. Rachel asks Benjamin's daughter to check on the cat, and they don't realize it, but each of these is a little act of worship, and God sees it. The day comes to set out. They get up early. They hang the baskets and bundles over their shoulders. Andrew opens the door, and they file out. And they won't see their little stone house again for over 3 weeks. And so they set out on the road, and as they are on the road, of course, they're joined up with other travelers from their village, other families, because they would travel together and go together about 90 miles down to Jerusalem, to Mount Zion. And what happens on this trip? Well, not everything goes well. Rachel's sandal strap broke 3 different times, and Joseph had to fix it again. And there was an unexpected thunderstorm, and lightning hit a cedar tree just on the other side of the road. And that was scary. And then there was the day where Joseph went missing for about half a day, and that was stressful. They didn't know where he was at, but turns out he was just with friends. There was a time they got separated from the main group and had to travel through some scary hill country, and Rachel was pretty sure she heard a lion. And then there was the embarrassing time when they were crossing the Jordan for the second time, and Sarah slipped and just totally collapsed in the water and went under, and they lost their best basket, and she was soaked. And then there were times when they just wondered if it was really worth it and wished they were back home. But they made it. And as the last few miles were winding down, they saw the roof of the temple shining in the sunlight miles away. And they thought to themselves, this was not an easy trip, but God was with us. And this is a small thing to give to a God so great. So the point of my little account is just to remind us that just like this family and faithful people from many years ago that we don't know the names of, we have to make decisions like, am I going on this journey? And am I going to do this? And because there's always a case to be made for staying home. I believe God has always had faithful people, even in the silent period between the testaments. I believe there were faithful people, and I like to think about them and how they had things in common with us and faced threats and difficult decisions, but found a way to live life that made God their shamar. Okay, let's look at each of these verses here briefly and make a few comments about them as we go through Psalm 121. So the first verse starts with this question, probably a question. I will lift up my eyes to the hills. And why is he looking up at the hills or the mountains? The Hebrew word can mean hills or mountains. And there are numerous explanations for why he might be looking at them. It could be that they represent Zion, and he is looking up at Mount Zion and thinking that that's where the temple is and that is where God is, and he's reflecting on that. Or maybe the author is just looking at the mountains around him, wherever he's at, and being reminded of the one who created them and thinking about that's a source of help. Or maybe the hills actually represent a threat. If you're going to get robbed on your trip to Jerusalem, it's probably going to be in those hills over there. And you're thinking about, how am I going to get through this? I don't know which of those is the real, the author's original intention. And this is the kind of question I can get really hung up on and spend a lot of time on. But really, the point of verse 1 is to just set the stage for verse 2, which is the real point. And that is, my help comes from the Lord who made heaven and earth. Heaven and earth. So nature has a way, at least for me, has a way of speaking to us, to our spirits, about God. And it has a way of telling our souls, I think, that God is great and deserves worship. And you can see it. The other night we were out there in the middle of the night watching for falling stars. And you can see it in the stars. You can also see it in the mountains. And I like to look at the majesty of nature and think about that the Maker is my helper. And I think it's really important for this to feel true to us, not just theoretically true. It needs to feel true to us. A person who can sincerely say, my help comes from the Lord who made heaven and earth, is in a very healthy place and is going to have a different kind of experience as a pilgrim than the one who knows it is technically true but would rather lean on something else than God. Verse 3 says, he will not allow your foot to be moved. How many steps are there on a journey? From Capernaum to Jerusalem would be about 90 miles, so around 200,000 steps just for that trip. And something to remember is that pilgrims came from all over, not just from within Israel. In Acts chapter 2, you remember, pilgrims were there in Jerusalem from all over the place, Egypt and Asia Minor and Europe. From Capernaum to Jerusalem, 200,000 steps. Can God really watch over each of those? And sometimes it's not the big problems that test us. Sometimes it's just the little ones and the daily grind. The Monday mornings, the math tests, the homework, the common cold. We need God's help to get through these things. He who keeps you will not slumber. The Guinness World Record for the longest time any human has stayed awake is 453 hours and 40 minutes. That's 18 days and 21 hours. A lot longer than I would have expected. This was set back in 1986 by Robert McDonald. And since then, there's been some question about, was he really awake the whole time? Because they've learned this, there's something called a micro sleep, or someone will actually zone out for like 3 seconds. I think I might have had those before. And they think maybe he was having micro sleep. He was not in good shape by the time he made the record. He was, and in fact, Guinness has stopped accepting this kind of record because of the inherent dangers, they say, associated with this kind of, trying to set this kind of record. So humans can stay awake pretty long, but not indefinitely. And eventually, even before Robert McDonald was done, he stopped being useful as a watcher or any kind of protector. God, on the other hand, does not get tired. And he does not get tired of watching over you either. And then verse 4, he who keeps Israel shall neither slumber nor sleep. And I greatly appreciate the two different levels that are going on here in verse 3 and verse 4. So on one level, in verse 3, we have God watching over an individual who is taking individual steps on a path. And then in verse 4, we have God watching over an entire nation, which he is going to use in this grand plan to bless mankind and restore creation and so on. And he's committed to doing that for this nation, for his people. But these two things are tied together. And the one who is keeping Israel is also keeping you at an individual level. And maybe it's easier for us to believe sometimes that God is going to take care of his church and the gates of hell will not withstand it. But I want to say that the same kind of protection and keeping power is there for us at an individual level too. Behold, he who keeps Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord is your shade at your right hand, verse 5. How far away from you is your right hand? Psalm 16:8 says, I have set the Lord always before me. Because he is at my right hand, I shall not be moved. The sun shall not strike you by day, nor the moon by night. Now, it's easy to understand the threat of the sun. Sun is hot, sunburn, sunstroke, all that kind of thing. Not so easy to think about what kind of threat is there from the moon. You know, sun's going to strike you by night. What exactly is moonlight going to do to you? So commentators have scratched their heads about that one. And they think maybe it's talking about, you know, the ancient belief that that the moon could could have some kind of negative effect on you. Moonlight could damage your mental health, and someone could be, you've heard of the expression moonstruck or lunacy. It has the word moon in it. So maybe the author saying, yeah, and you don't need to worry about that either. Or it could, I tend to just think of it as the Marism. You know, he's saying whether it's sunlight or moonlight or everything in between, none of those threats are going to defeat you. None of those threats are out of scope. The Lord shall preserve you from all evil. He shall preserve your soul. And I think of this in terms of not that evil can't attack you, but that God will help you stay strong. In 2 Timothy, I talked about this a few months ago, you know, Paul says that he's expecting to die. He says, my departure is at hand. He's expecting to give his life. But he also says, the Lord will deliver me from every evil work and preserve me for his heavenly kingdom. And then the final verse here is, the Lord shall preserve your going out and your coming in from this time forth and even forevermore. And that calls to mind the covenant promise in Deuteronomy, where the blessings were proclaimed to those, to Israel, if they are faithful in obeying God. There's all these promises. And God said, you're going to be blessed. Blessed shall you be when you come in, and blessed shall you be when you go out. This is another spectrum here. He's saying, in all the affairs of life, from going out to coming in, God is there in those. He is your keeper. Now, maybe we should quickly ask this question. What difference does it make? Bad things happen to good people. Bad things happen to bad people. And what difference does it make if God is really my keeper or not? Well, I do think that God keeps some bad things from happening to us, things that I haven't even thought of that God has kept from happening to me. It's true for all of us. It's good for us to remember. Also, the things that happen to us, God does use them for our good. He works through them. That's not really, when you're in the middle of them, that doesn't necessarily give you a warm, fuzzy feeling about whatever you're going through. But it is true. He will use those things to get our attention, to get us maybe back on track, and to grow us, maybe so we can help other people. A third thing is, I think God does help us respond to those hard times we go through. And he's there. He gives us grace. And maybe keeps us from flying off the handle sometimes, when we're tempted to. And finally, God sustains us. And he gets us through these difficult things. He will get us to Zion. We keep trusting him. So I'm going to end with just a few comments about how this Psalm 121 has spoken to me. Number one, it reminds me that God is very committed to my care. And this march toward Zion is something he called us to and something he enabled. He's responsible for it. He put us on the path. Romans 8 says, if God be for us, who can be against us? And he already did not spare his own son. So it's pretty obvious that whatever other little things he has to do to us, for us, is pretty minor compared to what he has already done. Number two, it reminds us that nothing is too big or too small or too much for God. He doesn't get tired. And he created stars and mountains, and he still cares for sparrows. Thirdly, it reminds me that God alone is my source of security. He alone is the helper. And we tend to prop ourselves up with things that are pretty flimsy. If I'm honest, I do this. And it's very tempting because they're tangible and they're useful, but they're not nearly as good as having God as our helper. Psalm 127 says, it is vain, it is in vain that you rise up early and go late to rest, eating the bread of anxious toil, for he gives to his beloved sleep. And I would like to learn the art of worrying about things that are necessary and not the things that aren't. And I do think when we get to the place where we see God alone as our keeper, I believe we will find a lot of peace in the realization that a lot of the things that we think we need, maybe we don't actually need so much. The challenge for us here that I'll leave with you is we want to be pilgrims. We want to get to the place where we can sincerely say, my help comes from the Lord who made heaven and earth. And where that can actually be kind of part of our daily experience and feel true to us even tomorrow morning when it's Monday and maybe things aren't even starting so well. Find a way to look to God for strength in these everyday challenges and make decisions that lean on him and expect him to come through and keep us on the right track. God bless you. Let's have a song.